OpenServe is more than just SA's largest telecoms infrastructure provider. It's the answer to new ways of doing business, a connection to cutting-edge technology and infinite possibilities, a connection to tomorrow. Connect with us at openserve.co.za.
This episode of Talk Central is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time.
I'm Richard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 239 for the week starting 21 October 2018.
Almost Christmas. Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central. You can WhatsApp the show. The number to use is 071-999-1111.
On Talk Central this week, the digital TV project is moving ahead. Can we get a hell yeah?
Also this week, as reported first on Tech Central, Standard Bank is launching an MVNO. Cell C is unhappy about the Rain Vodacom roaming deal. The Internet Service Providers Association wants the mobile operators to resell capacity on their networks. Huawei launches the Mate 20 Pro. Adobe launches Creative Cloud 2019.
Yeah.
And China is planning to launch its own moon. Okay, that is quite a show we have lined up here, Richard.
Indeed. It's Sunday. We're once again live on live.techcentral.co.za, and it's time to talk everything tech.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Let's dive straight in, because it really has been one of those weeks. I was saying just before we started recording that some weeks I'm scratching my head. What are we going to talk about this Sunday? But today it was a case of what are we going to leave off the list, because there's so much that happened this week.
Yeah, it was a great week.
So let's dive in and talk about it. But let's do our quiz first.
First question. Huawei this week debuted a new smartwatch, which is actually more of a tracker in a watch housing. What is it called?
And Apple has set the date for the keynote for the new iPad Pro models. When is it happening?
Third question. Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen died last week. How much is his estate worth?
And related to that, what is Paul? Paul Allen die from?
And the fifth question. Once analog terrestrial television has been switched off, Centec and broadcasters then have to move their channels out of the digital dividend bands. What is the process called?
As always, we'll get the answers to the quiz at the end of the show. But let's dive in and start to tackle some of that news. And let's talk about digital TV. You know, so little has happened on that front for so long. It's quite exciting. I went to a press conference in Pretoria this week with the communications minister, Nomvula Mokonyane, and there finally seems to be some traction happening. And
finally,
things seem to be moving now. Man. You know, anything could happen. The minister could be reshuffled, removed from cabinet, the DTPS and DOC re-merged. So there's every reason to believe that this could get knocked off the rails again. But it was all quite positive, I think. Presentations from the Premier of the Free State, from the minister, from Aldred Dreyer, who's the head of the project management office, you know, I think is really driving the things behind the scene. But things are moving ahead. Some clever, smart decisions have been taken. For one, cancelling the decision to issue these more tenders to manufacture set-top boxes, which is a process which has become fraught with allegations of tender irregularities and corruption. Mm-hmm. So that's not happening anymore. The government has said that this is effectively going to be given to the private sector, and that indigent households will be eligible for a voucher, which will have a certain amount of value on it. They haven't said how much yet, but you'll be able to use that voucher to go to Game or Macro or whatever store you want to go to. Exchange that, get a very cheap or free basic set-top box, or use that voucher as a subsidy to buy a more expensive set-top box or even an integrated digital TV set. So that's moving along. The minister has set a firm deadline and has said this time that deadline is not open to negotiation, that the project will be completed by then. And I think it's important to say that you know, because it gives everyone a timeline to work to. This is when we have to do this by. And she's also given deadlines for when each province is going to be switched off. So the Free State will be switched off by the end of this year, Northern Cape by March next year, and so on. And She does seem to have gotten on top of it quite quickly, unlike her some of her predecessors, I think most notably Faith Mutambi. But I came away from that feeling positive, even though this process is so many, many, many years late. There does seem to be a renewed urgency in government to get on with the project. Now, I had a brief chat with Eldred Dreyer during the press conference, or just after the press conference, and asked him about something called digital restacking. Now, not many people have heard of something called digital restacking. I don't know if you've heard this term before, Richard.
No, I haven't.
But I think many people have just assumed that once we switch off analog broadcasts, that's it, we're done. The digital migration project is complete. Unfortunately, that's not the case at all. It's only half the story. So once the analog broadcasts are switched off, this digital restacking has to happen. Now, in effect, what this is moving the television broadcasters who will have moved from analog to digital in the digital dividend bands, which is what the mobile operators need. So they'll still be broadcasting in the bands that the mobile operators are supposed to get access to post switch off of analog television. So we have to have this digital restacking where the broadcasters are moved out of the digital dividend bands and down into lower frequencies. Now, I just assumed that this would be a simple process of dialing a few knobs, but apparently it's very complicated and it's going to take up to 2 years to complete.
Sure.
So with July 2020 as the deadline for switch off, we could be looking still at mid-2022 before the operators get access to the spectrum. So almost four years from now. That's a big problem.
Yeah, look, I mean, and this is, isn't this a problem when a government it delays or when people aren't doing their job and stuff runs over, you know?
Yeah.
This is going to be a real problem for us. You know, we've already been delayed now that this is actually starting to work. The actual process is taking long. I guess it's good that we started, but I don't know. I mean, more wait.
Yeah. Anyway, Eldred Dreyer said to me that they can start. They're going to start with the digital restacking process in the provinces that have switched off. So starting with the Free State, and hopefully they have some learnings from that process. You know, doing the digital restacking in the more rural provinces, and by the time they get to the cities, which will be the last to be switched off, Joburg will probably be the last to be switched off in mid-2020. Hopefully, they would have made so many learnings from their processes in the smaller provinces. They can do it quickly. Or quicker.
Yeah, I agree. Quicker, yeah. Look, I mean, I guess within that too, we're going to have to, people are going to be using data a lot more, like we're already seeing.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably going to have more people than just within that transition. And it's further going to push digital, kind of as potentially not the main technology that it should have been.
Yeah.
Or that high-end.
I still wonder if we should just give up on digital television and go straight to DTH satellite and free up.
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking, yeah. Mm. I mean, because people, these delays are inevitable, I guess, now. But people aren't going to wait for something.
Yeah.
The technology like that is already being superseded by your mobile phone.
Yeah. I was chatting to, maybe I better not mention his name because I didn't specifically ask him to be quoted on the record, but I was chatting to an expert, let's call him that, at the press conference, who has many decades of experience in the broadcasting industry. And his view was that, his statistics, his research, or his company's research, is that 60% of households in South Africa are connected to satellite already. So the digital program is only going to impact about 40% of the population. That's a declining number. The other interesting thing he said was that in Germany, for example, the number of households that watch television through DTT, terrestrial TV, is down to 5%, and that fell by 5 percentage points in just 6 months from 10% in earlier this year. So that's heading towards zero. And Switzerland has announced that next year they will be switching off their DTT network.
Hmm. So we are technically already lagging with this technology then.
Indeed.
It's already old.
It's already old. And we're going to see more of this. I think in the next 5 years, we're going to see a lot of countries switching off digital terrestrial television because people just don't connect. Now, obviously, we're an emerging market. We're different. We're not Germany or Switzerland. And many households in South Africa don't have a cable connection or a fast internet connection or even a satellite connection. So, there is probably an argument that DTT here is not going to be switched off anytime soon, probably not before the end of next decade. In the next decade, around 2030 at the earliest, I'd imagine. But it still raises the question, shouldn't we just be going to satellite now so we don't have the problem of migrating everyone off digital in the future?
Look, with any new technology and with any such moves, at some point you're going to have to make a leap. Because if you don't, if you keep chasing existing or the next upgrade, you know, in terms of these broadcast technologies, you're always going to be lagging. But if you look at something, again, like a simple Wi-Fi connection, I mean, I know not everybody has access to it, but eventually everyone will have access to really good broadband, everyone.
Yeah.
Eventually. And again, if we are prepared for that, then being on a platform where everything just gets pushed to you via data. So you either get from your local hotspot, you get access to that, or just via your own home connection.
Yeah.
We don't need satellite for TV anymore. We don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just because it's kind of access to the most popular content.
Yeah, for sure. But things are moving ahead. At least that's a positive. After years of what's the word? I can't think of the word now. Nothing happening. Can't think of the exact word.
Limbo.
Limbo, yes. It's been in limbo. It's a good word. We do seem to be moving ahead again, even if we're years behind schedule. But interesting stuff. We'll chat a bit later in the podcast about the Competition Commission hearings, which are obviously related to this whole process because of the spectrum issue. Next on our list to talk about this week is the Standard Bank. And Tech Central actually broke this news back in February or March of this year when we reported that Standard Bank was working on an MVNO. And they confirmed to us this week that they are, in fact, going ahead with it. And it will be launching soon. No word on price, no confirmation on which network they're going to use, although the rumor is that they have reached or are about to reach an agreement with Cell C. I mean, this will be the second big bank in South Africa to launch an MVNO offer to FNB. FNB launched theirs back in 2015, so 3 years ago. Apparently, it's done reasonably well. I believe it's got hundreds of thousands of customers. I haven't seen any updated or recent figures, but I believe it's got hundreds of thousands of customers. But I don't know, why launch an MVNO?
I was just about to ask the same. It doesn't make sense. It's a bit of a weird thing. I guess it's a marketing ploy, or it's a marketing exercise, really, at the end of it.
I suppose.
Because you're using it to grow your base of people that you can communicate to.
I mean, I bank with FNB, and I have no inclination whatsoever to use FNB Connect.
No, for sure. But I guess there's people that, you know, let's call them basic users, you know, your average consumer. You know, I guess it makes sense for them to consolidate everything. If they can get their phone at a better price at their bank, like FNB does, you know, offer or used to offer. I don't know if they still do. Get your cell phone, everything. I think it makes sense for some people. But again, the only purpose for this really in a company sense that I can see is a marketing exercise because you are extending reach. It's tough to talk about. I mean, it obviously makes sense from that point of view. But if you're saying that you want to become a mobile player, I mean, it doesn't make sense, you know.
Unless they come to market with something radically different to what FNB's done, I don't see it shaking up the market in any major way. What's interesting is that when I chatted to Peter Schlierbusch a few years ago, I presume he's still in the same role, although I'm not sure. I think he was head of personal and business banking at Standard Bank. This was about 3 years ago, I think, and I remember chatting to him in Sandton, and There were rumors then that Standard Bank was going to do an MVNO, and he said they'd looked at it and decided against it. They've changed their minds, and I'd love to know strategically why they decided to change their minds on this.
Look, I guess if you are comparing apples for apples, it is a competitive angle that FNB currently has, right?
Yeah.
And if you just want to, I mean, whatever else you do, you're just going to have to match that and then try and offer something over it. It's always a kind of one-up game.
So the rumors they're going to do it, they're going to piggyback on Cell C. Steve Bailey, who's a former Virgin Mobile South Africa CEO, who left there and started MVNX, which is the MVNO enablement company. And they've launched things like Mr. Price Mobile and a whole bunch of other Boxel, Afrikaans network. and a bunch of others. So he's joined Standard Bank, and he's leading that process, as far as I understand it. I'd love to see them piggyback on another operator's network. Why is it always Cell C?
That was going to be the other thing I was going to say. In terms of trying to launch something like this, I mean, if you really want to be make a noise. Why don't you just launch a full-on mobile network, right?
Yeah.
They've got, you know, if you look at any of these these banks, they've got ATMs deployed in so many places. They all use satellites, so they've got some sort of backhaul, I guess. I mean, I don't know. It probably won't make financial sense to do so, but I'm saying if they want to make a big impact, that is how you do it, not MVNO.
Yeah, it's a bit late for us, I think, a new infrastructure provider to be coming into the market. But maybe one of them will invest in the WOAN when that launches.
Oh yeah, maybe they're just kind of testing the waters to see what's happening so that they can do stuff like that.
Yeah. But it's interesting anyway. I mean, the mobile operators obviously have keen interest in competing with the banks in financial services, although they haven't been particularly successful. Neither MTN nor Vodacom have really been successful in that space. M-Pesa didn't take off in South Africa, and the plug was pulled on that. But I think the banks realize that eventually the mobile operators are coming for their lunch. So maybe they want to just understand the mobile market.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, actually, yeah. Because you're right. I mean, your cell phone number can be a place where you hold money.
Yes.
That is becoming so easy to do. From a banking point of view, though, and I completely lost my train of thought, but there's do you think, this is what I was going to say, do you think it's possible that it makes sense for a business like that to onboard or to create an MVNO so that they can largely benefit off it for their own use internally? I mean, they've got a lot of staff. I'm sure they've got a lot of SIM-connected devices that they use themselves.
Yeah, there's an element of that. Their telecommunication spend will be large, but I don't think you launch an MVNO for your own staff.
Just for that?
No. But we'll have to wait and see. They're saying soon, so my bet is we'll see something before Christmas.
Yeah, let's see.
I mean, if they don't launch it before Christmas, I don't know. Maybe not. My guess will be before Christmas.
Look, to be honest, does it really matter? It's interesting because to see what they're going to be doing, but it's another MVNO.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're going to talk more telecommunications, but we need to take a quick ad break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Are you a search engine? Because you found me.
I feel we have a strong connection.
Well, you're pretty fly for a Wi-Fi. Should we drop it like a hotspot and head back to yours so we can show Max and snuggle? Let's get giga with it.
But I don't have fiber. Don't get caught in 50 shades of delay. Broadband your horizons and switch to Vox's super-fast, super-reliable fiber network. Experience the momentum. Connect your world. Visit us at vox.co.za/fiber.
Well, welcome back to the show. How's it, Rahat?
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thanks. The Competition Commission hearings this week. I couldn't attend them because there was so much else going on, but the commission very kindly live streamed it. They had a few teething issues initially, but eventually they got it all sorted out, and I was able to watch the entire 3-day inquiry into the data services market at the Competition Commission in Pretoria. I was very, very glad not to have to drive through there every day, especially since their hearing started at 8 in the morning. But it was, I actually had 3 live streams going on my desk in the office this week.
Nice.
Luckily, I have 3 monitors. So.
And luckily for fiber, right? Because ADSL would not carry that.
No. But the Competition Commission thing was interesting. They had the operators themselves, the CEOs of the operators. So we had Shamil Jusub from Vodacom. We had... I'm going to list off the CEOs. I'm going to forget their names now. MTN South Africa CEO Godfrey Motsa. We had Cell C CEO Jose Dos Santos. And we had Telkom CEO Sipo Maseko. Yeah, I got them all.
Sure.
And they all gave very interesting presentations, some of them quite hard-hitting. But I was particularly interested on the Wednesday, the ISPA presentation, the Internet Service Providers Association presentation by their regulatory advisor, Dominic Cull. In which he made an impassioned, and it's not the first time ISPA has raised this, but I think it's probably the first time they've set it out in such detail. They made an impassioned plea to the Commission to force the mobile operators to open up their networks on a wholesale basis, similar to the way that Telkom and Vumatel do in the fixed line market, where if you're an internet service provider, you can resell capacity on those networks. We know OpenServe does that, and OpenServe works with a wide range of ISPs. Vumatel does that as well. You can choose your ISP on top of its infrastructure, and then the ISP pays the infrastructure provider for that access, and you pay the ISP. In theory, it sounds brilliant. I mean, we know how competitive the ISP market is in the fixed line space. You can literally choose from 40 or more ISPs out there for your fiber or your ADSL connection.
It's just as easy to switch.
It's very easy to switch. It's usually on 30 days' notice, and you hop across to another ISP if your current ISP is not performing to your satisfaction. And I think a lot of consumers do switch. Now, what ISPA wants is they want the same thing in mobile. So you want broadband, mobile broadband. Okay, then you can come to any ISP, whether it's Cool Ideas or Vox Telecom or MWeb or whoever. They want the same model in the space, and they also want some sort of separation between wholesale and retail within the mobile operators, as we see in Telkom today. On paper, it sounds brilliant. Shamil Jusub, the group CEO of Vodacom, presented the very next morning at 8 o'clock, and he immediately poo-pooed this idea and said, we can't do this because we don't have this capacity on our network. How am I expected to sell this capacity when I don't have this capacity? Maybe he's got an argument. The network is under strain. They haven't had new spectrum in, I don't know, 8-9 years, possibly 10 years. So if they start to sell all this additional capacity on their network to ISPs, will the network hold up? I don't know the answer to that question. But maybe they make it a condition of, maybe ICASA makes it a condition of licensing new spectrum, especially if they get a large volume of spectrum. Next year, we know they're going through the auction process. Makes it a condition that they open up their networks on a wholesale basis to ISPs. I think that the operators, and the term they use is vertically integrated, Vodacom likes that model. MTN likes that model, and maybe it does require a regulatory intervention to force them to make their networks available on a wholesale basis. I'm not saying sell this capacity at below cost. I don't know how the wholesale price is determined. I would imagine it can be left to the market to determine, provided Vodacom doesn't set its wholesale prices above its retail prices, which would obviously be anti-competitive.
Sure.
But to me, it sounds like a good idea. If provided they have the spectrum, open it up.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But these conversations, you know, these kind of things obviously don't happen overnight. So the conversations are definitely going, and there's definitely what ifs and, you know, how are we going to do this? I think it's inevitable, but it's just a question of whether they can do it now or not. That is, as he's highlighted, is potentially the thing.
Yeah, I suspect the operators are going to fight this tooth and nail because it is going to lead to margin erosion. And it will lead to customer losses because if you can get a much better service from – and we've kind of seen this model already, right? AfriHost and MTN is that sort of arrangement. It's basically replicating that model across the whole market, across all operators.
But I don't think that's taken too much away from MTN, really. I mean, I guess most people that are on the AfriHost is an AfriHost customer by some other means. I don't know many people that's gone there just for the mobile offering. Again, it's about companies just having their little ecosystems that they offer everything to. And that's what everybody in each of the industries is trying to do.
Yeah.
And I think it can work. It's not the best way of doing it, I think, but it can work. But in AfriHost's case, if you look at how well it's been doing, I mean, it's still one of the best ways to manage your data on a mobile device.
Yeah.
I don't know if many of the other guys who have the same kind of functionality.
Yeah.
So that will drive innovation.
It will.
It will definitely.
Yeah. And the Competition Commission has the power to intervene. It's not that toothless, unlike ICASA, which spends its life in court. I think if the Competition Commission decides to do something, it's going to do it, and it will enforce it. And it did it with Telkom. It basically forced OpenServe.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. So whenever we need so much innovation in this space. We need competition. You know, we can't be holding back at all. So everybody's going to fight what's in their own interest. Let's just hope, again, for the consumer, it prevails the right way.
Yeah, yeah. I actually think the Competition Commission stepping in and enforcing wholesale access to the operators' networks will probably be hugely more impactful than this planned wholesale open access network that the government wants to build.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The other interesting thing that came out of the hearings this week was presentation by Robert Paisley, who was presenting with Jose Dos Santos, the CEO of Cell C. Robert Paisley is their chief strategy officer and also acting chief financial officer. And he had a real go at Vodacom and Rain over their roaming agreement. He blasted ICASA and said that the regulator had failed in its duty, in its regulatory duty, by allowing the roaming agreement with Rain. And basically, he said that it has given Vodacom a huge unfair advantage in the market. Basically, Vodacom has Rain spectrum now, which they were trying to do through the Neotel deal. He calculated, Cell C's calculations, I wasn't quite very clear how they came to these numbers, but he said it gives, by 2020, it gives Vodacom a 11.5 billion rand benefit in terms of cost savings and other benefits. They were very unhappy. And they also said, what was interesting is, you know, that Cell C has recently signed the roaming, a 4G roaming agreement with MTN, and they're planning to terminate their roaming agreement with Cell C when it expires, I think, in 2020. He said that they also approached Rain for a roaming agreement and got nowhere in terms of negotiation. They couldn't even get a reference pricing guide in terms of what it was going to cost them. And the insinuation there was that they were basically told to go away, or not in so many words, but they weren't welcomed to have a discussion. And I think the insinuation there was that Vodacom has some sort of exclusive arrangement with Rain, even if it's not written down in the contract.
I'm sure it's people that know each other that came to this deal too, you know, or company. Yeah. It's not, and obviously for Vodacom they would do this. I mean, it makes so much business sense.
Yeah.
It's being competitive in an industry, and for some people they're not going to like it, you know. For others, you know, it might help a little bit, and then for Vodacom it'll be a good deal. Sorry.
So, I spoke to Willem Ruys, who's the CEO of Rain. And asked him for his reaction to Cell C's comments at the Competition Commission hearings, and he declined to comment on, specifically on the Cell C discussions, but did say that Rain is open to roaming deals with any operator. Come and talk to us. So
maybe they just had their wrong account manager. You never know.
I don't know, but that Vodacom deal with Rain is interesting. I do wonder if there's some mutual backslapping going on, and I'll look after us and we'll look after you sort of stuff.
But isn't that how most major deals go? Because if you're going to be investing in something, you want to know that you're going to get the best side of it from both sides, right?
But they've got to be careful, these guys, because the regulations in this field are pretty tough. We saw how Vodacom couldn't get Neotel, and that was because of the regulatory environment. And they obviously need to tread cautiously, and they know this as well. But I do wonder if there's some unwritten rules surrounding this Rain Vodacom agreement. Certainly, Cell C was hinting that there are.
Maybe there's some texts on a WhatsApp group. We never know.
Yeah, for sure. Right, let's talk about some new product news and. Huawei Mate 20
Your next
Pro.
Phone.
I strongly suspect this is my next phone, yes. The South African launch is happening on Tuesday this week. I'm going to be popping through to that. Looking forward to it. Did you watch the keynote?
No, I didn't. I've been
It
swamped.
Was actually a very impressive keynote. The chap from Huawei, I'm not sure what his name was, his English was very poor, which I really think they need to use an executive who... He wasn't bad, but you know, his presentation style because of the language differences. Mm. You know, it wasn't great, but the product announcements were fantastic, and that Mate 20 Pro is simply amazing looking phone. I'm almost certainly going to get one.
Yeah,
but they're not cheap, eh?
Yeah, look, I guess. Well, I mean, Apple cheap or Samsung cheap? I mean, we have to define those.
It's sort of in the high end Samsung pricing category, or not in the Apple category, no.
Yeah. But look, I mean, again, it's an Android device, so the money you're spending, I guess, you know, if you want a high end device, you are going to be spending a lot of money, right? Mm. Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. But at least with something like Android, you do have an open platform.
Yeah. But the camera setup looks absolutely incredible, especially the wide angle photography. Also, the macro photography that they announced, that was very impressive. You can get, I think it was 2.5 centimeters away from your subject while it stays in focus.
Yes. Yeah, that's amazing. And it makes sense. I mean, with four cameras, you know, you have a dedicated camera for each of your settings or each of your features.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the type of shots you want to take. You know, each one is the best of its own kind of little sensor. And yeah, I'm surprised nobody else has done it in this array before. It looks quite cool in the back with a little cluster of four cameras.
Oh, it's three cameras plus a LED flash.
Oh, the sensor, sorry. Yeah.
And then it's got, I think, one camera in the front. It could be two. I forget. But the hardware inside there, I'm really looking forward to testing it out. It's a Kyron 980 chipset, which looks amazing.
That's going to be a beast.
Dual NPU or neural processing cores. It looks like a beast. I'm not sure what more there is to say about it. It's got every spec. Everything's been thrown in there. It's got face unlock. It's got it's got an under the screen fingerprint sensor, which I'm really looking forward to playing with.
Yes, that is going to be absolutely incredible to see in the flesh.
In screen, it's the first. I think it's the first major manufacturer to do that. I think some of the smaller Chinese manufacturers have launched, possibly Vivo. I think Vivo may have done one, but it's certainly in terms of a major global handset launch, it's the first time. And hopefully the technology is perfect in the first gen, since I'm probably going to be getting one of these.
But look, even if it's perfect, it still is, right? It still is just an amazing feature set, of any phones. If you look at Huawei, though, what they've been doing, you know, they really are, you know, it's only been the last year that I've looked at this brand as like a something that I would look at buying in terms of a smartphone. I mean, they've had some decent devices before, but again, they just I just didn't look at the brand as you know, a serious brand in my kind
it's improved
portfolio of things.
It's improved by leaps and bounds. This year was the first time I actually considered getting a Huawei when the P20 Pro was launched. My wife actually ended up getting one of those, and I've played a little bit with it. It's a fantastic phone. It's the first time I think they're now in a league with Samsung and Apple in terms of the quality, and that wasn't the case before.
It'll also be interesting in terms of the software too, just to see how they keep it up to date. Does the latest Android versions come to these devices? Because that's, for me, is one of the other things I consider when I buy a high-end Android or
they
when I'm
are promising
looking.
That. Yeah, they are promising that. It's got this MIUI UI that sits on top of it. Last time I did speak to a Huawei executive, they said they have promised that they're going to keep these phones up to date and do so quite quickly. But the proof is always in the pudding. I'm happy if Android manufacturer provides 2 years of updates. I don't think they generally provide much beyond that.
No, for sure. But then Google Android should come to the party and make those releases available for generic downloads for those of us who want to hack. Because a platform should be able to do it, right? You should be able to load it on most devices. Mm. But if you look at the roadmap for upgrade path for Android phones, because you know, I'm happy with my phone that I've got here, it's a OnePlus 5. It's a great device, but at some point I'm going to need to upgrade it, and it's probably going to be next year sometime.
Yeah.
Because I just need a few more things, maybe a newer camera or something, and also you just want to have a little bit of something newer tech. Now the question is, which one do you go for? And like I was saying earlier, for the first time, Huawei is a very good contender.
It is.
I'm still liking the Nokias, but they dated now. You know, those there's nothing new coming from them yet that makes me go wow.
Well, they're doing incremental updates, so they've announced the Nokia 7.1, which looks quite nice. It's actually a very nice phone, that Nokia 7.1.
But it's not as I guess, iconic as something like this.
Yeah.
It's what I'm getting at.
But it's also not nearly as expensive.
Yeah, true that.
But I think Nokia hasn't got a proper premium flagship. I mean, there's the Nokia 8 Sirocco, But that's not a premium top end handset. It's nice. It's the most expensive and best phone they do, but it's still not in the same league as a Galaxy S9 or a Note 9 or a Huawei Mate 20 Pro.
Sure. I want to get some hands-on time with this one. I might join you on that. Maybe we see if we can get a 2-for-1 deal.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's on Tuesday evening. I'll send you the details.
Cool.
I will send you the details. And, of course, the other big news product announcement this week, which both Rechot and I are very excited about, is the launch of Adobe Creative Cloud 2019.
Yeah. What exciting. It was quite exciting. I'm a bit of a geek for the software, so I really, really looked forward to those special upgrades that they've launched with.
So what are your thoughts so far?
I really liked it. I haven't played with everything yet. I haven't touched Premiere Rush yet. I haven't played with those. In terms of Adobe and Illustrator, there's a lot of little things that I've noticed that's making workflow a lot easier.
Uh-huh.
You know, the biggest thing for me is to be able to undo changes in Photoshop. Now, with a lot of the tools in Photoshop, you could never undo changes or undo certain movements and certain things up beyond like 2 or 3 reverts. Now you can go back straight to the beginning of the document, you know, with what you've edited.
And just with Control Z without hitting that weird combination of two steps
exactly,
backward. Yeah,
exactly. The way that it handles fonts within Photoshop now, I also like. It's handling a little bit differently, but then obviously more importantly is the way that fonts in general with Typekit is now, you can get as many fonts downloaded as you need to.
Yeah.
I often struggled with that 100 limit. I do a lot of different designs, and it's difficult to then have to choose which fonts to uninstall just for this 100 limit.
Mm-hmm.
FontKit is something I also enjoy using. But let's not forget Adobe Sensei, which is what this entire platform is built on. I think that's where the most interesting stuff is, the AI framework, that the tools are, that the software is now using to provide you with help and tips and tricks, mm-hmm. and also mm-hmm. to help you, just be clever with stuff like content aware fill.
Yeah, I noticed that there was a lot more assistance in particularly Photoshop, but I'm sure it's in all the apps. I just haven't played in the other ones.
Yeah, all of them have it. Yeah,
but it helps you. It guides you. It'll play your video. Which is very useful because Photoshop is a hellishly complicated product to learn.
Yeah. And I think they've also known that their user base, and most Adobe users that I know work like this. You don't know everything about the software, right? You kind of learn the stuff that you need to work with. And then once in a while, when you need to learn something, you go out to YouTube and you find it. Now what they've done, obviously, is bring that. They've always had a good, strong library of tutorial content.
Yeah.
But it's always been hidden. It's been weird to kind of access that.
Yes.
Now it's sitting with – it's context aware. So if you want to do something on a tool, there's videos right there to show you how to use it.
Yeah.
The quality of the Adobe tutorials has always been good. So, you know, having this right there is fantastic.
Yeah. And we'll be talking a little bit more about this when I get around to my pick a bit later in the show.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that covers our news this week. Let's move on to our regular features. I haven't missed anything, have I, Rechot?
No.
There was so much to talk about. No, I think we've covered it. Our regular features. Our winner this week is Huawei, the rise and rise of Huawei. They really are doing so well, expanding around the globe, and not just in smartphones and consumer electronics. They're building the network infrastructure. If you're talking on your cell phone here in South Africa, the chances are very good that the call is being carried over Huawei infrastructure. They provide a lot of switches. They provide, and they're expanding and they're growing. It's an amazing company to watch. They really are the technology leader of China, and I think I get the impression they're still in their infancy, which is scary.
Yeah, but look, I mean, with technology, you know, have been around for 100 years.
Yeah.
You just need to have the right expertise.
My expectation is that they're going to overtake Samsung as the world's biggest smartphone manufacturer at some point in the next year.
Oh, yes. I would put money on that bet.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And unless you have, Rechot, something to pick as our loser of the week, we don't have one this week.
No, I don't.
You don't want to pick on – you don't feel like picking on anyone
No,
this week.
I'm not a picking on people kind of a guy.
Okay.
But I've had to delete some tweets that I've wanted to post recently of just – bad experience with the company. So,
yeah.
You know, when you just want to say something, I don't want to.
Okay.
So I don't do it on impulse.
Just have a few beers first and then you'll send it.
Exactly.
Actually, once you had a few beers is when you should be closing your Twitter.
Elon Musk.
Yes, Elon. After having a few spliffs or something.
Exactly.
What's your pick this week?
So I've been playing with a new phone, and when I say the brand to you, you're almost going to fall off your chair. But I've been playing with a BlackBerry.
I know what you're going to. I'm about to say BlackBerry.
Okay, so you've heard it. Okay, so this is the new phone. It's interesting. I mean, obviously it's running Android now, but obviously the thing that stands out to most is that it's got a keyboard at the bottom. So it feels like a throwback to, you know, the old Nokia phones that those keyboards, obviously any old BlackBerry.
Yeah.
But so it's weird to use a modern smartphone with an old keyboard. It's been a bit of an interesting using time for me in the last week. But it's not been a bad one, which has been quite weird for me. I wanna not like this phone. But it's actually quite nice. The keyboard has, you know, for the last week when I've been using it, I would actually go sit outside to type some mails that I normally do just sitting in front of my PC because I hate typing on my screen.
Yes.
I don't know why. Just recently, it's just become the worst experience, and I hate typing on a touch screen keyboard. But with this, it's obviously a much different experience, right? Because you've got a physical keyboard, and the key responsiveness and the keystrokes are really nice. You know, they've got a nice little click and a pop. So getting around typing is easy. So if you want to do any major email composition or tweeting, or because tweeting is now 240 characters, if you want to do it properly, you can do so quite easily now. But then having the touchscreen capability above that. Now, obviously, the screen is a little bit smaller than your average your average smartphone screen because of it. You know, if you put the BlackBerry key to next to any other normal smartphone or large screen phone, at least it kind of looks and feel like any other phone, but the screen is a little bit smaller than that. It's a 4.5 inch screen, so normally it's if you compare it to a 6 inch screen, you know, it's kind of the same size device.
So
again, there's a trade-off. I've actually given this to a few people to just kind of feel, put in their hands what they think. And a lot of people commented on the backing. The backing has got this rubberized, textured feel, which is fantastic. The phone doesn't feel like it's going to slip out of your hand. Most other smartphones definitely feel like, you know, my OnePlus slips out of my hand all the time. There's a fingerprint reader in the spacebar button, which is also quite a nice addition, which I kind of liked. So in terms of usability from the keyboard, you know, unless you want a large screen device for any particular reason, this thing still offers, you know, touch screen device, a touch screen capability. It's a nice high resolution screen. It's 434 ppi, 1080 by 1620 pixels, for those of you that follow specs. It's just an Android smartphone, right? Running Oreo
with a keyboard.
Yeah. It didn't make me feel like I was using a BlackBerry at any point. I mean, there's some BlackBerry features built in, and obviously some software that you can utilize if you want to have some BlackBerry specific functionality, and the security stuff is still there. But for anything else, you know, I've been using it as my normal smartphone and I like it. I've been enjoying typing on my smartphone a lot more because of this. And that's made me reflect on why I hate typing on a screen so much. Yeah. You know, it's kind of, especially if you're doing, I'm not talking about short bursts, I'm talking about writing an email with at least two paragraphs. Yeah. And that's what a lot of people do these days.
It's amazing. I mean, it wasn't that long ago when BlackBerry was so dominant in South Africa, and now it's gone.
Yeah, they've fallen from grace, and now they're just still around.
It's TCL now, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, in terms of build quality, this thing is perfect, you know. It's beautiful compared to anything else that I've got in my hand. It's a nice matte black finish. It feels nice. The buttons, there isn't, you know, there's no weird response things on the buttons that make them feel cheap, you know. So it's a quality device.
Were you ever a BlackBerry user back in the day?
No, never. I used them for testing purposes, but I never liked them.
Neither did I.
It didn't make sense to me. The software was the thing that always bugged me.
Yes, agreed.
Android is so much right. Yeah, exactly. Android was always the one. So, I mean, it's the best of both worlds. So, obviously, this will be largely dependent on price, too. I mean, it's a nice phone. But so, a 12999, so for 13 grand, it kind of puts it, you know, it's a mid-range phone.
Mid-tier. Yeah. No, is BBM still around, by the way?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
So the phone doesn't come with BBM on it.
I haven't seen BBM on yet. There's a, you know, there's their security stuff, but I haven't seen BlackBerry Messenger. Let me actually just quickly. I haven't even tried to look for it.
Yeah, it's probably there. Hey? It's probably there.
It'll be interesting. Let's see.
No one uses BBM anymore. They tried to resuscitate it. They tried to resuscitate
it. Oh, it is here. You're right.
It is still there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's BBM. All going.
Voice and video calling. Wow.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Nice. Okay. Well, I would not install that right now. But I was pleasantly surprised. The camera, in terms of the camera, it's obviously not like high end. You're not going to use this as, it's not going to be as good as some of the other high end phones out there. But it's pretty decent at 12 megapixels. It can shoot video. Highest resolution is not pure 4K, but it's 2160, so it's like better than HD. And the selfie camera is an 8 megapixel shooter. So, I mean, you're not going to buy this. It's going to work fine if you... Yeah, I mean, I can see a nice use for the social media managers, for example, people that go to things and tweet. And, you know, the camera will be fine for that because you'll still be able to run all your favorite software when you're editing stuff.
Yeah.
And the resolution doesn't matter so much on those.
Yeah.
It's the keyboard. I would, if you think that a keyboard is something that you'd like to have in your, I was pleasantly surprised by this. I'm still surprised every time I use it. I would kind of look forward to using it a bit more. I don't think I will use it as a permanent phone, but I wouldn't mind using it for a bit longer, if that makes sense.
Old school, Rechard, old school.
Old school, yeah, exactly.
Rocking it old school.
Tactile feedback. But it's incredible to think that you're kind of looking at this touchscreen device. So you can use your phone without ever touching the keyboard. And only as soon as you want to type, you can quickly do it. It's a, it's a pretty nice experience.
And the keyboard doesn't slide away. It's there all the time.
No, it's on the screen at the bottom, yeah. So it almost looks like a 4.5-inch phone with a keyboard slapped at the bottom. Mm. But the design is nice.
They did one as well. I think one of their first Android phones, if not their first one, was a slider version. I really liked that. So it was a full touchscreen and you slid it up. Yeah, that was a nice device.
But obviously, with manufacturers that don't like to go with anything bulky these days, I don't think we'll ever see that type of tech.
I don't know. Maybe it didn't sell well enough.
Yeah, look, I mean, maybe if this thing was a bit cheaper, I would have said yes. But still, at 13 grand, I'm going to compare it to everything else out there. And then video and photographs is more of a priority for me than a keyboard is, unfortunately.
So my pick this week is a new app in the Adobe Creative Cloud called Adobe Premiere Rush. And I was fiddling with it a bit this morning, actually. I haven't used it extensively yet, but it basically takes Premiere Pro and makes it easy to use, which is
nice.
Premiere, as you know, is well, I struggle with it a bit.
I use it all the time, and I struggle with it all the time, but I love it.
So Premiere Rush is really designed – it's a clever name. It's basically suggests that it's Premiere for people in a rush. What it does is it's for the for people who shoot with their phones and stuff. You can take video from any source. But if you want to stitch together a quick video for Facebook or YouTube, it just allows you to slap the elements together, create some nice titles, fade effects and all that sort of thing, shift video elements around – very simply, very easily, and once you've done that, to hit a button and publish it instantly to social media, including to YouTube. It's really fast. It hasn't got all the bells and whistles of Premiere Pro, but at the same time, I think a lot of consumers just like to get stuff done quickly. It's a bit like Lightroom for video in a way. Lightroom is a way to quickly touch up your photographs. Premiere Rush is a way to quickly slap together a video and put it online. And I like it. I really like the idea. Whereas Premiere Pro has intimidated me, Premiere Rush isn't. So I think I'll be doing more video editing.
And let's be honest with you. I mean, I haven't played with it yet, but I will. From what I've seen, I will definitely be using it for some of my shots, for some of my videos at least. Because there's a lot of complexity that comes with certain editing things that you want to do with Premiere, and obviously you want to keep doing those things. But for most stuff, anything you put on social media, this is fantastic. Yeah. And like stuff like slapping on a title, you know, it takes you a few steps in Premiere Pro if you want to get it right. You know, with this, you know, those titles you just slap on the screen. Yeah, exactly. It's going to make a lot of people much better video editors, video creators at least. They're definitely appealing to the YouTube generation, guys that's creating for YouTube and that, you know, Instagram stories. So,
yeah, that ability to publish direct to YouTube is fantastic.
So especially, you know, I've seen so many. If you look on Instagram, there's a lot of young creators out there that use their phone primarily for everything. Mm-hmm. So they do shoot and then use whatever tools they have to edit and then upload. So Adobe is definitely out to get the young market with this and then get them to upgrade to the other stuff if they go to those levels of editing. Mm.
I'd love to see this included in the photography tools that they sell as a separate subscription package. I think it currently contains Photoshop and Lightroom, if I'm not mistaken. Mm. I'd love to see this bundled as part of that package because it would fit nicely in there.
Yeah, but I would imagine it's going to take a lot from their Premiere users then, because there's a lot of guys that get Adobe just for Premiere or also get Premiere so that they can do some basic editing, not even advanced stuff.
But your guys are using it to do television production and stuff. I mean, they're not going to switch to this. It'll be they'll continue.
No, of course not. Yeah. But even those guys, when the social media department has to go do something quickly, if you're not going to wait 2 days for your clips to get edited by the professional guys, if you on a social media platform that's a bit more edgy, can just push it out yourself.
Yeah, yeah. But if you subscribe to the entire suite like Richard and I do, it's included. But it ain't cheap, unfortunately. And it's an annual
commitment. We also use it for work, right?
We do, exactly.
It's very much a work tool, and it's definitely one of the best work tools I've been using in the last few years.
Yeah, yeah. But it works out to about $8,500 a year.
Still cheaper than a copy of Photoshop was back in the day.
Yeah, if you bought the whole thing just straight off the shelf, the whole thing back in the day, I think it was about 40 or 50,000 rand.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, we didn't even mention this with the Adobe chat earlier, but what they've done is with Adobe CC 2019, they've rebuilt the entire thing. So there's no legacy parts on that. So when you actually install it, it will uninstall everything, any of the old, I mean, you obviously have a choice to run them both side by side, but the Creative Cloud 2019 is built on a completely new platform, code-based platform.
I didn't know that. Okay.
That's obviously for the Sensei stuff too, because it's so deeply integrated into everything.
Right.
And you don't pay extra for that, right? You just keep paying your subscription and they just do all the work.
Did all the work, yeah.
That's the beautiful thing about Creative Cloud or a subscription-based service.
I noticed when I updated mine, it deleted all of the old apps except for Photoshop, which I had to manually uninstall.
Was that Photoshop CS?
No,
it was Photoshop Creative Cloud.
Photoshop 2018. The old one.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. The only ones I don't uninstall manually is the CS stuff because that's obviously a previous licensing generation, I think.
I don't know why I kept it on my computer.
That's interesting.
I don't know why I kept it on the old one.
That is interesting.
But everything else it got rid of. Last year it kept last year's update, it actually kept all the old versions on my computer. I had to manually uninstall all of them.
I vaguely remember something like that. There was a bit of an issue, it was just a hassle.
Yeah, but this year it was just Photoshop. And I don't think I did it on my laptop. I think it was only on my desktop that it didn't uninstall Photoshop. So maybe something went wrong during the installation process.
Yeah, probably.
And that record, I think, is our show for this week. Apart from our quiz results, let me do the first question. Huawei this week debuted a new smart watch, which we did not talk about in the show this week. And it's more of a tracker, fitness tracker than I can see in a watch housing. What is it called? And that's the Watch GT.
A second question. Apple has set the date for the keynote for the new iPad Pro models. When is it happening? And the answer is 30 October.
Ooh, can't wait for that. Cannot wait for that.
Yeah, that's going to be cool.
Yeah, new MacBooks as well coming. Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen died last week. How much is his estate worth? And that's $26 billion.
Wow, that's quite a hefty chunk of change. What has Paul Allen died from? And the answer is non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, a form of cancer.
And the last question this week, once analog terrestrial television has been switched off, Centec and broadcasters have to move their channels out of the digital dividend bands. What is this process called? And it is digital restacking.
Yeah, I'm sure the algorithms are going to be working overtime there.
And I won't be here next week, Rehat. I'm going to be traveling next weekend, so we'll only be back with the show in 2 weeks' time. Hope you don't miss us too much. But we are playing out with some very good music today. I hope you enjoy it. Richard and I, by the way, are going to be doing a joint version of the Rock Central podcast sometime in the next couple of weeks, where we'll be focusing on South African rock. If you enjoy your rock music, please do subscribe to us. We are available in Spotify now. Just search Rock Central, one word, in Spotify, or any of our Tech Central podcasts. In fact, Tech Central, Talk Central, the podcast you're listening to right now, Cars and Gadgets, and The Best in Tech, which is hosted by Richard. Those are all available in Spotify. If you just search Tech Central, all five podcasts will come up. And I'm pleased to say that Rock Central is also available in high definition audio, or high quality audio, in Spotify. So go check them out. And speaking of rock music, we are going to be playing out with some, I suspect, quite loud rock music now.
Richard, it's not too loud. It's actually pretty chilled. Yeah, no, it's good. It's
okay. I love it loud. So that's fine.
Oh, no. This thing can definitely be played very loud.
Okay.
The song is Into the Wild by... not Into the Wild. It's a song. It's from the movie Into the Wild, which I would highly recommend anybody to watch if they haven't seen it. Based on a true story of a guy by the name of Christopher McCandles. It was just a traveler, and it was just about his life and his yearning for getting away from things and modern life, I guess. And the song was Eddie Vedder. There's a few good interviews with Eddie Vedder and Sean Penn, the director of the movie, around the soundtrack if you want to look for it online. But so Eddie Vedder wrote the soundtrack, and this is one of the songs from that.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys again in 2 weeks. From Richard and myself, until next week, take care and cheers.
Ciao, ciao.
And I'm playing the wrong song.
I guess that'll be edited in then.
It started playing Queen for some reason. Let's try that again.
I built an ivory tower so I could worship from above. When I climbed down to be set free, she took me in again. There's a bee, a big hot sun, beating on the big people in the big hard world. When she comes to greet me, she is mercy at my feet. Yeah, when I see a pin of charm, she just throws it back at me. Once I dug an early grave to find a better land, she just smiled and laughed at me and took her blues back again.